You know, when a car reaches the end of its life, it's not just scrap metal anymore, is it?
No, not at all.
There's this whole complex process,
Huh.
dismantling, recovering materials, trying to do it responsibly.
Absolutely. And managing these end-of-life vehicles, ELVs, it's a huge environmental puzzle.
Right.
Millions of vehicles every year, full of stuff, some valuable, some hazardous. Getting it right is critical.
And that's exactly what we're diving into today. We're looking at a proposed new EU regulation for these ELVs. But we're not just reading the official text. We've got a specific viewpoint.
Yeah, we're looking at it through the eyes of ORS, the Car Recycling Forum.
Exactly. Based on a presentation they gave like just recently,
Yeah.
May 22nd, 2025, in Warsaw, they laid out their critique of the draft regulation.
So our mission today is really to unpack what ORS is saying. What are their key points, the challenges they see, their main criticism?
It's their perspective, you know, from
Yeah.
the ground floor on how this law might affect them and the whole recycling goal.
Let's get into it.
Okay, let's unpack this. First off, the regulatory side. This isn't just a minor update, right?
No, it's a pretty big shift, legally speaking. This proposed ELV regulation is set to replace the current directive, 2005/3/WE.
And the difference is key, isn't it? Directive versus regulation.
Huge difference. A directive sets goals, and then each country makes its own laws to meet them, allowing for some variation.
Right?
A regulation, though, is like directly applicable everywhere,
Yeah.
instantly. The aim is much more consistency across the EU.
So less wiggle room for countries. And the main goal, as CRS points out, it's still about minimizing the environmental hit from old vehicles.
Yeah, improving how they're collected and processed. And this is all happening under the umbrella of the European Green Deal, aiming for that more sustainable circular economy.
Okay, now here's where FORS seems particularly concerned, the scope. It's not just cars anymore.
Not by a long shot. It gets much, much wider. They're adding motorcycles, you know, categories L3E through L70,
Right.
plus heavier stuff like trucks, categories N2, N3, buses M2, M3, trailers, even special vehicles.
And FORS, representing the dismantlers, they see this as a massive operational headache.
Well, yeah, think about it. Handling a huge truck versus a small car, totally different.
What kind of challenges specifically?
They mentioned needing specialized kit, much more space, obviously, especially for the big vehicles.
Right. Storage alone.
Exactly. And staff training, dealing with different structures, materials safely, plus potential big investments in infrastructure and just more paperwork, more complex reporting.
So why should you care about this? Well, it's not just bureaucracy. It hits the real-world capacity to actually recycle these things. Can the current places even handle buses and big rigs properly? It affects costs, efficiency, and whether those green goals can actually be met for all these vehicle types. From 4RS's view, it looks like a steep climb.
Absolutely. And then there's the definition issue. What even is an end-of-life vehicle? FRS is basically saying, we need a compromise here.
And they gave some pretty confusing examples in their presentation, didn't they?
They did. They talked about criteria where a vehicle is waste. Like if it meets rules from something called Correspondent Guidelines Number 9, say it has a total loss recorded.
Okay, straightforward enough, maybe, but then.
But then they give this example. A car declared a total loss, but it's been fully repaired. If you try and move that car across an EU border under those guidelines, it can still be flagged as waste as an ELV on inspection.
Wait, even though it's fixed and roadworthy, it's still legally waste.
Potentially, yes, according to those specific guidelines they cited.
Seems odd, right?
Very odd. It feels like it clashes with wanting to repair and reuse.
Exactly. And then they contrast it with when a vehicle is not waste. Under the main EU waste directive, waste is something the owner gets rid of, intends to, or has to.
So if none of that applies.
It's not waste. And their really surprising example was a completely burned out car.
A burned car. How is that not waste?
Well, if it burned accidentally, the owner didn't intend to discard it, and there's no legal requirement forcing them to. Under that specific definition, the burned shell itself might not technically be ELV waste.
Wow. Okay, so a perfectly repaired car could be waste crossing a border, but a burned wreck might not be. That's messy.
It really is. This whole definition mess seems like it could cause huge problems, inconsistencies, maybe even loopholes for owners, insurers, repairers, everyone.
Yeah, you can see why Forsos wants clarity there. It really highlights how hard it is to make one rule fit every single situation.
Definitely. Okay, let's shift gears a bit. What about recycled content and managing parts?
Right. The draft says new cars need 25% recycled plastic by mass.
And there's a catch within that. A specific chunk, 6.25% of the total vehicle mass, which is a quarter of that 25% plastic target, has to come specifically from plastics recycled from ELVs.
Okay, so that's 6.25%. That puts direct pressure back on the dismantling stations, according to FORS.
Big time. To supply that specific plastic, they need to get way more detailed in their dismantling. They have to sort plastics very carefully by polymer type.
Not just plastic, but like this specific kind of plastic.
Exactly. PP, ABS, PE, identifying it precisely so it can be recycled into high-quality stuff for new cars. And that might mean investing in new tech for sorting.
And they see hurdles with that.
Oh.
Practical problems.
Oh, yeah. They point out lots of parts are mixed materials, really hard to separate. Plus, plastics that have been recycled before might not be good enough quality.
Degraded, maybe.
Could be. And doing this super precise sorting manually, hugely expensive and slow.
Okay, what about the part removal mandate? Taking out non-reusable bits before shredding.
Yeah, FRS isn't keen on that either. They see it as excessive, costly, and potentially really hard to enforce.
Why is that? Don't you want those parts out?
Their argument is that modern shredders are already pretty good at separating metals from the lighter stuff, the fluff. Hmm. Pulling specific bits out by hand first might not actually improve the final recovery rate much, but it definitely adds labor costs.
And tracking.
And tracking becomes a nightmare. How do you reliably verify the total recycled mass if lots of little bits are being pulled out beforehand? It complicates the calculations.
And then there's this list, a list of parts where reuse would be restricted.
Yes, and FRS sees this as fundamentally undermining the whole reuse part of the circular economy. They think it actively works against extending a product's life.
What are the negative effects they pointed out?
Several things. First, it's an uneven playing field. The restriction hits the legal, regulated dismantling stations hard.
But not others.
Exactly. It doesn't really touch individuals, people working on historic cars, or crucially parts coming in from outside the EU, sold online, whatever.
So the legal guys are restricted, but parts can still flow in other ways.
That's the concern. Second, they reckon parts on this restricted list will just get pulled out before the car even gets to a proper station.
Ah, so they get salvaged and sold off the books.
Precisely. Which means the station can't count them as reused, hurting their ability to meet reuse targets and cutting into their revenue from selling used parts, which is vital for them.
That sounds like a massive own goal, pushing reuse out of the system you're trying to regulate.
It does seem counterproductive, and they make one really sharp point. What if a part on that restricted list is no longer manufactured?
Like for an older car.
Yeah. If you damage that specific part and you're legally barred from using a salvaged, reused one, you might not be able to repair the car legally at all.
So you'd be forced to scrap an otherwise repairable car.
That's the potential scenario they raise. The recycling rule could accidentally kill the car's usable life. It really makes you think about how recycling goals and repair goals sometimes clash.
Definitely. Okay, let's talk targets. The draft aim's high. 95% total recovery, 85% recycling and reuse.
Ambitious goals, for sure. But 4S points to a massive flaw, something that's already a problem. And this draft doesn't fix the calculation method. It's based on an old decision, 2005-2-93-EC.
And the problem with that method is?
They say it lets you include the weight of waste materials that were taken off the car before it even got to the official dismantling station.
Wait, stuff removed elsewhere. Maybe illegally dumped?
Potentially. Waste that's basically unaccounted for, maybe just left somewhere. Including this ghost material in the starting weight makes the final percentage look much better than it really is.
So you could have illegal dumping actually helping the official recycling stats.
That's the perverse outcome FRS is highlighting. They mentioned some countries reporting over 100% recovery rates, which is physically impossible if you start with one car unless the calculation is flawed.
Right.
And their big criticism is the new draft has no clear rules to fix this dodgy calculation method.
And how does this tie into who's responsible for meeting the targets?
Well, they use Poland as an example. There, it's currently only the legal dismantling stations who are financially on the hook for meeting these national targets.
Just the stations, not producers or anyone else.
Apparently so, in Poland. They pointed out that from 2006 to 2016, stations got some aid, about 120 a ton. But since 2016, it flipped. Now they face penalties, maybe 50, 100 a ton. If the national targets aren't met.
Wow, so the financial risk landed squarely on them.
Seems like it. Even though hitting those targets depends hugely on factors they don't control, like whether cars even get brought into the legal system.
And speaking of that, the draft sets a 100% collection goal, which sounds, impossible.
it's incredibly ambitious, and 4RS argues very strongly that the draft, while stating this goal, offers absolutely zero practical ways or rules to actually achieve it.
Do they have numbers to back that up, the gap between goal and reality?
Oh, yeah. The stats they gave for Poland are pretty shocking. They say less than half of ELVs there even reach a legal station.
Less than half.
That's what they report. And in 2024 alone, over 7 million vehicles were deregistered in Poland without any proof they went to a proper facility.
7 million in 1 year.
Yeah.
Just vanished.
That's the implication. And if you look at all registered vehicles in Poland, something like 35 million, they say over 8 million don't have insurance, over 11 million don't have a valid inspection. That suggests a huge pool of potential ELVs just sitting somewhere outside the system.
Those numbers are mind-boggling. It points to a massive missing vehicles problem.
Absolutely. And it's not just Poland. F4S estimates that across the whole EU, the fate of about 3.5 million vehicles every year is unknown. They just disappear.
And the draft regulation doesn't address this.
According to F4S, no. It sets the 100% collection target, but fails to say who is responsible for achieving it, nationally or at the EU level. And crucially, there are no consequences mentioned for failing to get those vehicles collected.
So a target without teeth, a massive loophole where millions of vehicles just fall through the cracks.
That seems to be exactly their concern. It undermines the collection goal and therefore all the recycling targets that follow.
Okay, so if we pull all these criticisms together, what are the main areas where 4S thinks this draft really misses the mark? What existing problems does it just not fix?
Based on their presentation, there are several key things. First, as we just said, no sanctions or a clear responsibility for missing that 100% collection target.
Right. And no tools for countries to encourage collection.
Correct. They specifically mentioned it doesn't allow member states to use economic incentives, like maybe a small payment, to encourage owners to bring cars to legal sites.
Which seems like a practical idea lost.
Also, the whole gray market issue. They say there are zero solutions proposed for tackling parts of unknown origin being sold online or shipped in, bypassing the whole system.
And the dodgy calculation methods we talked about.
Still there, apparently. No fix proposed for those methods that can inflate the recycling stats.
Anything else major?
One more technical but important point. No rules limiting car makers from using electronic security, like software locks, that prevent perfectly good parts from being reused in other vehicles.
Okay. So given all that, what's FORS's bottom line on this draft regulation?
Their conclusion was blunt. The current draft is unacceptable as it stands.
And they mentioned a procedural issue, too.
Yeah.
About influencing the next steps.
Yeah, they pointed out that once the public consultation on an EU regulation closes, that's usually it for direct input from groups like them. The rest happens behind closed doors.
So what do they suggest should happen now?
They argue that future work on the law has to take into account the practical points raised in these kinds of industry discussions. And importantly, they want more flexibility for individual countries to adapt the rules to fit their own specific market realities and challenges in meeting the goals.
Right. So wrapping up this deep dive, we've seen this proposed EU regulation has big environmental ambitions for vehicle recycling. But stakeholders like 4S, the people actually doing the dismantling, are raising some serious red flags about the practicalities and the systemic flaws in the current draft.
Yeah, concerns covering, well, pretty much everything. The scope, the definitions, the plastic mandates, the part restrictions, the target calculations, the collection failures, the lack of accountability. It's a long list.
So considering all these complex issues 4S brought up, I mean, from arguing about what waste even means to the sheer difficulty of tracking millions of cars and parts across borders and figuring out how to hold everyone accountable, how can regulations realistically close the loop on vehicle recycling? How do you make sure these environmental goals actually get met fairly and effectively everywhere, given how different markets are? It's clearly not a simple fix, is it?